Well, it was something that I'd grown up with as a kid, and I guess people say all the time, Summer Wine is a real family program, and for me it definitely was. It was something I watched with my parents. This would be late 70s, early 80s for me. And I'd always stuck with it. I drifted away a little bit just when I grew older, went to university, and then started work. But I'd always had a real fondness for it. And then when I became friendly with Andrew, we discovered this mutual love for the series. And I think we watched the last episode together, didn't we, in 2010?
Yeah, I think that is the catalyst.
Yeah, we sat and watched that episode together. And as a joke, these are my memories of it. Drew's might be different. As a joke, I think one of us said, what we should do now is watch the first episode and then carry on. Does that sound about right?
It does, yeah.
So go on, Drew. What about yourself then? You watched that last episode. Now, people who listen to this show quite a lot will know that I'm a Last of the Summer Wine fan, although I suspect you two have probably taken fandom to another level. But I can remember that last episode, you got Truly and Clegg. There was... I think they even got them on a bus at the end. There was like a tour going somewhere, wasn't there? So what was it about that that made you think, do you know, I'm going to start a website all about this show?
Well, I think just like Bob, I drifted away from the series as well. I started watching in the early 90s when I was a kid and then slowly drifted off. And I came back for those last couple of series. And I don't know, there's something about the series finally coming to an end, which means that everything is now finite. You know, there is a definite number of episodes and definite number of series to be watched, so that is a challenge that has a beginning and an end, and I don't know, there's something very neat about that, so that might be what sparked it off in our minds.
Now, of course, when you look at the show, it was the longest running sitcom, I think, worldwide of all time. It had a very firm structure. As you go through, it changes in many ways, but you always have kind of the three distinct characters. There's always the leader who thinks he knows best. You've also then always got a couple who follow, if you like, whether that be Norman Clegg, whether that be Compo. Cleggy, of course, goes through the whole entire thing. But the leader, there was Michael Bates, I think he was called Blaymeyer. Then you get Foggy Dewhurst. Then you kind of move through then. What's the difference, would you say, Drew, compared to the end from those at the beginning? From what I remember, it's a lot grittier. I think it's actually more hard work to watch now.
I think the early ones really are gritted in this... grounded in this early 70s grit and grime. When you watch the early episodes and they're on location in Holmfirth, it looks manky. You know, it's very much a post-industrial town. All the buildings are stained with soot. Everything looks a bit, you know, down and out. And Summer Wine's kind of this brilliant cultural document, because as the series progresses, you see the surroundings regenerate. As the show got more and more popular, tourism came into that town and sort of helped the economy in that sense. You see the buildings cleaned up. Everything becomes a lot more picturesque. I think in terms of the actual setting and in terms of the content of the show as well. So as you say, things become a lot more jovial as it goes on. And I think the cast broadens out as well. You were saying, you know, it always revolves around this trio. And at the beginning, it very much is the trio, and then there are people who they encounter. But as it goes on, more and more actors are added, more and more characters are added, and it becomes this huge ensemble piece, which feels very, very different to how it began.
I think that element of Summer Wine as being a social document is a huge thing for us, and that was one of the reasons that we wanted to do this and watch every episode in order. And that idea of it being about, in the very early years, post-industrialism is absolutely spot on. If you look at it, there are these abandoned mills around the hillside and disused warehouses. There's soot on all of the buildings. And even Compo, you know, people think that Compo is called Compo because he's a bit like compost because he stinks a bit. And he's not. He's called Compo because he's had industrial compensation for an accident at some point. And he's lived off that for the rest of his life. So it's fascinating to watch the way that Holmfirth evolves and the way that British society evolves as the series trundles on. I think that's a huge part of it for both of us.
Okay, so we've spoken about then the fact that it does broaden out. It goes from being the three men. I mean, in our house, right, because I've grown up not far from Home Firth, in our house it was actually called The Three Men from Home Firth. I didn't know it was called Last of the Summer Wine until I was about 15. But what like the side characters, Bob, would you say? I mean, I've had a look through your Summer Winos website. I know you're quite a long way through the series now, and I've looked through what you've been putting in, and Wally Batty is one that I know you guys, you've looked at. For me, Wally Batty is the ultimate of the side characters. Bob, is he the one for you, or do you have somebody else who's really kind of got into your heart?
Wally is absolutely phenomenal, played by an actor called Joe Gladwin, who we discovered fairly recently through speaking to another actor on the series, Jonathan Lindsley, who played Crusher in the 80s. Much younger actor than Joe Gladwin, but they became good friends. So Joe told the stories of his life to Jonathan, and Jonathan, to our utter delight, has told them to us. Joe Gladwin was a music hall performer. He worked in Variety, and he was a stooge, and he would come on, and he would be introduced as the strongest man in the world, and he would come out of the audience don a loincloth. And obviously he was this tiny, weedy fella. But because of this background, he had the most extraordinary comic timing. And I think Wally in Last of the Summer Wine steals every single scene that he's in. Mm. He's completely hangdog. He is utterly straight. You know, he never plays a line for laughs. But he's absolutely magnificent in it. He has become a real icon for us, I think.
And when you look at Nora Batty as well, I mean, he's the perfect foil for Nora. She needs somebody to almost, not bully, but almost it's like that, and he just works that so well.
Well, I think the funny thing about watching Wally and Nora together is that despite the fact that they bicker constantly, they clearly absolutely love each other. And they wouldn't be able to survive. Well, obviously they do survive without each other because Nora goes on for a long time, but I think Nora changes once she loses Wally. She becomes a different character, a little bit softer possibly. But we've said a few times throughout the course of watching the programme that we would absolutely have loved a one-off Wally and Nora episode. Just a two-hander, it would be fabulous because they are a great, great comedy double act.
Drew, who do you see as the best character away from the main three?
Well, I think, as Bob says, I think Wally takes it for us. But I think in terms of someone who's really undervalued, I think it's Jane Freeman as Ivy, especially when she's alongside John Comer as Sid. And again, in those episodes, we kept saying we would love to see a spin-off of just the two of them. And I think that's the hallmark of a good supporting character. I think it's when they're so well-rounded that despite the fact you're spending limited time with them, you can easily imagine them, you know, going off on their own lives, sustaining episodes of their own. And Jane Freeman, there are just certain moments in the series where she's just a phenomenal actress. You don't necessarily think of dramatic acting when you think of Last of the Summer Wine, but there are just these really small little moments with Jane Freeman where you get a real sense that she's thought through the character's backstory and there's a deep, rich life to this character.
Now, you guys running the Summer Winos website, this has obviously connected you with a lot of other Last of the Summer Wine fans. I mean, it's helped me find you by the fact that you were on doing this. And have you spotted that there is a lot of love, Bob, sort of all around the world, really, for this so Yorkshire and most Yorkshire of programmes?
Absolutely, yeah. And I tell you what, the really surprising thing is for me is that it has a huge American following. I remember the first time that an American fan posted on our website, being quite surprised and thinking, oh, that's unusual. But apparently it played on American TV quite a lot. And we have now got regular American correspondents, both on the Facebook group and the website, that keep in touch with us. And I think they see it as, it's almost like a mystical world for American fans. Very few of them have actually been to Home Firth. I mean, many of them have never been to the UK at all. So for them, it's a window into this very, very British, very Yorkshire world. It's a very distinct little, it's almost like a little bubble, isn't it, Last of the Summer Wine sometimes?
It might as well be Hogwarts to some of them, I think.
So yeah, it's absolutely got a global following.
Drew, do you think then that people outside of the UK, in America, and actually possibly some outside Yorkshire, do you almost think that the Wally Batty, you know, the flat cap the whippet, the pints. Do you always think that a lot of people do think that that is what Yorkshire is really like?
Yeah, I think there's truth to that, but I think there's it's a stereotype, but there's always truth to a lot of stereotypes. I didn't grow up in Yorkshire, I'm from the northeast, but growing up I saw men like Wally Batty dotting the streets and the social clubs and the pubs all the time. That kind of person did exist. This sort of weather beaten, with his back broken by the job he's had to do all his life, sitting there with his pint and his whippet. It's definitely coming from reality in that sense. I think a lot of the perception of Yorkshire from outside of Yorkshire probably does have a lot to do with summer wine, for good and bad, I think. Obviously, Yorkshire's reputation as having this brilliant landscape, which it does, isn't hurt at all by the show, especially as it goes on, and it's really showcased in the cinematography.
I think, to the show's credit, it never particularly falls into portraying Yorkshire and Yorkshire people as a stereotype too much, and I think that's possibly because in Roy Clark it has a writer who clearly loves the county. I don't think it's ever, that e-bar gum stereotype. Mm. I never get that feeling from Last of the Summer Wine. I think it's a genuine portrayal of the town and the county as it was at the time and as it continued to be as the series progressed. I think it's very, very affectionate, and it never becomes a parody of Yorkshire.
No.
Now, I know you two, because of this, you've gone to some of the locations. I've actually been educated by looking on your website, because one of my favourite episodes was one, it's called Full Steam Behind. It's very early on, I think it's like 70s or so. Foggy decides to lead the other two to go and see, steam trains, and it's a comedy. Well, obviously it's a comedy because it's Last of Summer Wine, but in so many ways. And you guys, you've actually been to where it was filmed, and me and my dad, and my dad's from Huddersfield, we've always tried to work out where that was. You two know, because Drew, you've actually been to this railway station.
Yeah, it was the Keighley and Worth Valley Railway, which is a heritage railway, was operating back then, and fantastically is still operating now. So if you take yourself along to Keighley, you can go along the same stretch of track, you can notice the same, same stations that they were at, the same bridges. And that's one of the nice things about Summer Wine, I think, especially because Homeforth is such a big part of it. You can actually visit these places and make a connection with the series that you couldn't with, say, I'm trying to pluck a sitcom out of the air here, but you can't go and visit Grace Brothers Department Store, for example, or you can't go and visit the Church Hall from Warmington-on-Sea or something like that. The location reports, we get a fantastic response to from people like yourself who want to learn about the things, but also from people who perhaps can't get there themselves. We talk about American visitors to the website, and they want to learn the behind-the-scenes story of this thing as well.
And Andrew leads us nicely, Bob, onto the fact that, Homeforth is where it's known for Last of the Summer Wine. And you guys, you had an event. You mentioned earlier Andrew Lindsley, he as Crusher.
Sorry.
And you had Crusher in the cafe. How did that go?
It was fantastic. Yeah, we got in touch with Jonathan Lindsley, who plays Crusher, just to interview him for the website. And we expected a 20-minute interview, a little bit of a chat. And we were on the line to him for about an hour and a half. He was just utterly fantastic. And I think the idea had started to germinate about the possibility of putting on a small event in Homeforth, just to celebrate Last of the Summer Wine, and to invite some of the people that had been reading the website regularly. And we asked Jonathan afterwards if that would be something he'd be interested in, and he absolutely snapped our hands off. I mean, Jonathan lives on the south coast, so it's a bit of a trek for him, but he'd never been back to Homeforth since he left Last of the Summer Wine in 1987, I think, 88. He'd never returned to the town, so the possibility of coming back for him was a really enticing one. So yeah, we've actually made friends with Laura Booth, who's fabulous, and she runs the cafe, Sid's Cafe, which is now a working cafe, and she is just fantastically indulgent of all of our crazy ideas. She was utterly absolutely up for the possibility of doing an evening with Jonathan Lindsley. Crusher in the Cafe, we called it. It was last October. The cafe only seats about 30 people, so we had to make poor Jonathan do it twice, because we sold twice as many tickets as that. But he's brilliant. I've got to say, Jonathan is an extraordinary ambassador for Last of the Summer Wine. He is still in love with the programme, is absolutely brilliant with the fans, and he's been just incredibly generous with us as well, with his time and with his energy. I can't speak highly enough of Jonathan Lindsley. It was a brilliant night, and he's become a very good friend.
Right, final question, and Andrew, I'm going to start with you then, Bob. Ask you second. Andrew, favourite episode of Last of the Summer Wine, what is it for you?
I think the series probably peaks with a TV film that they did called Getting Sam Home, which is during the first Foggy stint. It was based on a book by Roy Clark that he wrote in the very early years of the show, and they decided to adapt it for television. And it's one of, I think, British comedy's really overlooked gems. I think because it's a television film, it gets overlooked in terms of being a film, and it also gets overlooked as being a sitcom because it doesn't quite fit in that, you know, it doesn't fit in the half-hour format, it doesn't have a laugh track. But it's this beautifully dark story about the trio having a friend who dies, and they then have to deal with the aftermath of that and get him back to his house from his mistress's place and deal with the funeral. Very, very dark stuff for a BBC, you know, what's perceived as a BBC family-friendly sitcom, but it's beautifully observed. So, yeah, definitely Getting Sam Home.
Bob, what would be your episode?
You're gonna expect me to say something different now, aren't you? And I can't. Getting Sam Home for me as well. I'm sorry. It is just the most extraordinary British... It is a British comedy film. It's 90 minutes long. And it's phenomenal. But when I think about it, everything about my love of Last of the Summer Wine at that age, when I was 9, 10 years old, is wrapped up in Getting Sam Home. It's dark and it's witty, and it's got these beautiful characters interacting with each other in the most gloriously effortless way. It's moving, it's very, very funny. It's everything I love about the show is wrapped up in Getting Sam Home.